to Jaguars This Week.
Jaguars This Week.
Presented by
Aetna.
With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
And Tony Bissell.
Caller analyst, Jeff Lagerman.
And Tony Bissell.
And Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher.
And Tony Bissell.
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Barbecue, Wells Fargo, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank.
Jaguars This Week begins right now.
All right, here we go on a wet and rainy evening here in North Florida. Brian Sexton along with, not our entire cast, but the better half of it, right? Tony Baselli's here. John Osher across the table. Joe Fortunato. How are you guys?
The dead weight isn't here.
Yeah, I didn't say that. I did not say that.
I did.
I was just laying it out there. You got to take the shot at the guy who isn't here, I guess.
Unfortunately, he's out of listening range.
Where
right?
is he?
I don't know.
Vegas.
Yeah.
I've spilled the beans.
Oh, that's right.
He's in Vegas. Some kind of deer convention.
Yeah, hunting convention.
he ain't listening to the podcast.
The convention of death.
Week. Let's get all together and have some possum stew and shoot some deer.
I talked to him. You know what? He's never been to Vegas before.
That's what he told us last year.
Hard to believe.
It was amazing.
I've never been. Now I'm the only one that's
really?
Ever been.
I haven't either.
Yeah.
You guys have never been to Vegas?
I'm not really a Vegas guy.
No, but I mean, like, never. Your travels haven't taken
I've
you
I've been all over
there.
The world. I have not a lot been of, to Vegas.
I've covered sports for 20 years, and there's not a lot of, you know, except for UNLV, there's not a lot of occasion to go.
I mean, I guess it's different growing up in Colorado, going to USC. I mean, I drove through Vegas multiple times a year.
Had a few weekends, I bet, in college.
Yeah, maybe. I'd rather not talk
Were those
about
paid
that.
Out of your pocket or some boosters?
I paid my own way.
All right, so
I wasn't a big time recruit. So
oh yeah, right, sure.
I wasn't
number two in the country.
I was not a big time recruit out of high school, at all.
I believe that
wasn't bigger than you though.
You were bigger
yeah,
than me,
probably
very true.
So. All right, phone number this evening, as it's always been, 355-NFL1, 800-355-6351. I was in here last night finishing up the final coaches show. You guys were outside, and the reaction
outside was better, by the way.
Yeah. What are you saying? But I was doing a coach's show without a coach.
6,700 people.
You guys are better. Yeah, yeah, I would think so.
It was more
better.
Fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it was a good event. Very good event.
Did they expect it to be that good, or did they hope it would be that good?
Did they expect that? When you say that good,
you're
that many people?
7,000 people on a Tuesday night for a team that hasn't been to the playoffs in 5 years?
I'll be honest. The fans blew me away in the best possible way. And very encouraging. I think you can sense the energy and the expectation, the hope. A lot of it, what Shad has kind of demonstrated, his passion and his excitement, it's wearing off, or rubbing off, I should say, off on the fan base.
Wasn't it set up for like 5,000 people, and they had to stretch it out a little more?
We were maxed out in the Bud Zone and the South End Zone. So, unfortunately, the overflow went on the outer seats who could not hear,
right?
Because all the sound was directed at the south end zone.
Right. Well, it was interesting for a time, you know, while we were all standing on the field, and we were standing with some of Mr. Khan's people, and they kept asking, "Is this what it was like last year?" And I wasn't here, but you know, Tony was laughing, and for about 10 or 15 minutes, you would kind of turn away and look up, and it was continuing to fill up and continuing to fill up, and it, as somebody said afterward, they basically opened the doors. And told people they could come, and yeah, 7,000 people, which is...
And here's the thing.
In mid-January.
Well, and there would have been more, but the traffic was so bad on Main Street, Bay Street, it was backed all the way up to the Main Street Bridge, and people started turning around, because we didn't plan the traffic. You know, game day, you change all the lights so it's all flowing one direction. We can't do that on a business day at the end of business. It's just impossible. And so traffic was terrible, and we probably, who knows, maybe 500 or 1,000 people that decided not to come. Who knows what the number is, but it was an outstanding event. The very cool part was everybody stayed around to the very end. Mm-hmm. Everyone's autograph got signed. I mean, Shad Khan was the last one on the field signing, and Derek Cox was there late.
Right.
A lot of guys were there late. It was a very cool event, and I think the fans – got a taste of what's, you know, the energy and the passion that's going to be around this team.
When somebody asked me, and we can all kind of talk about it because we've had a chance to meet him a few times. Somebody asked me today, you know, why I think people are responding so much to Shad Khan. And, you know, my theory is that he has come in and he is obviously an energetic, intelligent man.
He's a rock star.
And
that's what he is.
Right. But he has also come in and he does not portray himself. He does not carry himself as somebody who has all the ideas. You know, he is approaching this as pitch perfect as you possibly can, and it's not a sales pitch. It's who he is, and the city's really responding to it.
John, what you just said, it's who he is.
Right.
And so, listen, we still got to win, and we still got to go sign the right free agents.
Sure.
And we still got to draft the right team, and Mike Mularkey's still got to do a great job coaching, and Shad has to make, you know, be judged on those decisions, and Gene Smith, all that yet to be determined. Like in a lot of situations, I think all of us here have confidence
right.
that those are the right decisions. We're excited. But as right now at this time as a new owner, he has something you can't create.
Right.
And that's a coolness factor. Whether it's the mustache, yeah. whether it's the way he dresses, it's the way he carries himself. I mean, think even back to him talking last night. He didn't say a lot.
No.
But whenever he said something, the place erupted.
Right.
And so he has the unique ability to communicate, even if it's in shorter right. bursts or not. You know, he's great on the radio when he just kind of talks and flows.
Yeah.
But he also can control
mm-hmm.
a room or take control of a room and communicate in short bits, which gets people excited.
Well,
some people can just do that. I mean, it's just – he's good at it.
It's also important to realize there have been owners in the last, you know, 25, 30 years who have come in and done it the wrong way, thought they had all the answers, tried to bring all of their business thoughts into the NFL. And you
Redskins
know,
might be an example.
Well,
yes.
That's the one I'm most familiar with because I was a fan of the team when that happened. But, you know, I think what is appealing to people about Shad Khan is he's obviously had incredible success in his life, but he also knows that not everything he has learned elsewhere automatically fits. He's trying to learn, and he's okay with saying that, and I think that humbleness also appeals to people.
Well, and he signed autographs until every
right.
person had an autograph who wanted his autograph. There were almost 7,000 people
right.
there. He did not leave until every single person who wanted an autograph from Shad Khan could get one.
And enjoyed it.
And didn't.
Right.
Yeah, and just walked around and had, you know, and his wife Ann was out there the entire time. I mean, it was.
You mentioned.
It's neat to see. It really
You mentioned that he had an impact on the crowd. I will tell you, now again, I'm sitting here watching the TV behind you last night, and it sure seemed like the crowd had an impact on him also.
Well, that was, I mean, I've done a number of these events. Mm-hmm. That was an easy one. I mean.
Yeah, you just got out of the way.
It was easy for all of us because the crowd was so excited. I mean, you almost had to, like, burp and they were going to clap. And it shows you that the fan base is so
right.
hungry.
Right.
They want to be excited. They want to get behind this team. They want to support the team. I mean, they are hungry. And so when it's Gene Smith or Mike Mularkey or Shad Khan, I mean, Derek Cox and Montel Owens did an outstanding job. Whoever it was, the crowd was there wanting, saying, listen, so you know, we're behind you. We want you to do well, and we want something to cheer for.
Right.
And I was at an event today and spoke, and you felt the same thing.
He seemed to get a little emotional two times, I thought, when we were watching. Once when the crowd was chanting, yes, we can, to him.
Yeah.
And then with the Afghanistan
that
video, too.
Very cool. That Afghanistan video was very cool.
Well, he has a sense, and he's talked about it a lot, of he owns the team, but he also has a sense of the responsibility of ownership. You know, that there's a, you know, although he owns it, he says, I want to be accountable to the fans. You know,
and he said that last night.
And again, that goes back to there are NFL owners who strike you as very arrogant, and he is the opposite of that. I mean, he is the, you know, as I said, you know, you can't praise it enough because
it was fun too.
It's not always easy to come across how you are, and he has come across how he is, and it's appealing to people, and it should.
For you to say that it was fun is the most meaningful part of it to me, because I, like you, have done a lot of events, and over time, no matter what, they all start to run together.
Right.
It's tough to differentiate them. You get up, you have the same message, you try to bring a different enthusiasm. And for you to suggest that last night was fun is probably the part that sticks out.
I enjoyed it. I mean, I was there, you know, signing autographs, being a part of it, because it was enjoyable. It was fun to feel the fans' energy. And if there's anything that – I don't want to say missing, because I don't want to talk down to our fan base. I think they've done mm-hmm. a great job in the midst of being 5-11 this year and 8-8 and really blowing it at the end of the season last year. I mean, if you think about it, we're 5-14 – after being 8-5
right.
the last three games, and then this year, not a lot of cheer about. So this is not a negative comment towards the fans, but that energy that they had last night, you had not seen. It started to wane, which is natural because people get tired of losing. The people right. get tired of mediocrity. And to have that back and to at least kick it off. Now, listen, and I say this as an organization, the Jacksonville Jaguars, we have an obligation now to take that energy and to move that down the field and to use that and take it and build off of that for the future by putting a great product on the field, by having a great offseason, by going out and, you know, with all our Team Teal stuff we're going to do and all that different stuff, of going out and now meeting them as they come and bring the energy to us.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Eric is on a mobile phone with a thought for Tony. Hello, Eric.
Hey, Tony. How's it going?
Great.
Hey, I'm sorry they missed having you there with the Weavers induction and into the pride of the Jaguars. I know you wanted to be there for that.
Yep, it's been great to be there.
So, has Logs gotten you that watch yet?
I got the watch.
You got the watch?
I got the watch.
All right. I was actually thinking, as much as Tony wanted it, maybe donate it to Coach Tucker for the job that he did while he was there.
I'm sure he's got his own watch.
Yeah, he has a watch. You bet he is. Eric, we appreciate the phone call. We need to go. We got a break. More to come. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. Live from Everbank Field, only on Jaguars Radio.
Jacksonville's most...
Welcome back. Jaguars This Week continues now here on Jaguars Radio. Brian Sexton, John Osher, Tony Buscelli. Phone number 355-NFL-1-355-6351. Dave's on the west side, up first here in this segment. Hello, Dave.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Good.
Good. I wanted to ask Tony a question, and hopefully it doesn't sound like baloney like Mr. Osher so eloquently put it today in ozone, but how you doing, Tony?
I'm great. Dave, good, how man. Are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, man. Thank you. Hey, I was going to ask you, I know this may sound a little off the wall, but what do you think the chances are of somehow with the technology that we have today of getting some sort of, whether it be a type of screen or something to block the sun on the east side of the stadium? I know it's a little far-fetched, but geez, I mean.
Block the sun?
Well,
I'm glad he asked
you that question.
Dave, let me say it this way. My wife, for the 7 years I played here, through four pregnancies and seven seasons, sat in the East Club every dang game. And it's amazing, as for a woman who was pregnant and had kids, never complained once about the sun and cried about the sun. In fact, she was fine with it. And my message is, the East Club, it gets a little bit warmer, but there's discounted water and there's all kinds of things. And just be thankful you don't live up in New England, where I was last week, and it was like in the single digits with the wind chill. I'll take the sun any day. So I think the cost of blocking the sun and spending tens of millions of dollars to create a far-out scientific wind sun shield, I think we're tough enough fans to get through a couple games of hot weather.
It's probably baloney. which is an ozone reference from this morning.
Well, I mean, listen. First of all, I know it's hot, but are we that soft? I mean, come on. You got to be kidding me. I mean, I'm not lying. My wife sat there every game I played in the heat, pregnant, whatever, and never once did she come home and say, I need to move to the suites, which I'm sure, Bill and Mackie would have been happy if we had bought suites, or the West Club where it's shaded, or anywhere else. She sat in the sun and smiled and cheered her little heart out.
For her hubby.
I don't want to be insensitive to our fans, but I am sure tired of hearing people complain about it being too hot.
By the way, you are the only people that he does not want to be insensitive to.
I always beg off because I'm in the press box, so I just
the air conditioning gets a little cold up there sometimes.
I don't beg off because I played in the sun, and my wife can sit there. I think
Good enough. 355-NFL 1-800-355-6351. Sounds like you're getting adept at handling these. You're getting these questions.
Well, I'm just so tired about it. And we all talk about it here at the East Club. And I spoke today at the Gray Robinson, the big law firm, does a quarterly thing. And they have different speakers. And I was their speaker. It was about the Jaguars. And I told that group, I think there's about 175 professionals. I said, listen, you are the ones who need to buy the club seats. Just like we did in the beginning. And it's not about not being blacked out anymore. I'm so tired of that.
Right.
We now need to have 67,000 people in every seat and be the 12th man and bring – forget the financial part, because the new CBA changes a lot of that. This isn't – listen, obviously it's a business. We need to fill the seats because of money, business-wise. But that's not the biggest reason any longer. The biggest reason is to make the 12th man, to have a home field advantage. And so I need all you corporate people listening who can afford it, go buy East Club seats and West Club seats and Touchdown Terrace suites and fill the dang seats – and be there on Sunday.
Let's make this thing cool again.
That's what it needs to be. I mean, this is not, you know, let's just beg, borrow, and steal to get a blackout so we're not blacked out. That is not the standard. We did that. It's over. This is a new day, new era, rebirth, whatever you want to call it. We are now going forward. I expect 67,000+ people in the stands and being there. So go buy your club seats and don't tell me it's too hot. You know, go move. You want cold weather? Move to Green Bay. Let me know how that works.
Or something you could play underneath as he gets wound up.
No, but I'm serious. It's time. And listen, last night told me, with the almost 7,000 people there on a January who were so excited,
with a team that's not been to the playoffs.
It's ridiculous for us not to have 67,000 people there. And listen, it's ridiculous if us as Jaguars and this team doesn't put a winner out there. That's unacceptable as well. It's unacceptable to be 5-11. It's unacceptable to be average. We should be in the playoffs, and that's on Gene Smith and Mike Mularkey underneath Shad Khan's leadership. They need to put a winner on. But the fans need to get their butts in the seat and have 67,000 people there, and we need to get that done because it needs to be the place. And I am more energetic now after last night, Osh. I mean, you sit there, it's like, come on, we can do this. This is all we got. This is our team. Let's make this the best place to play. And I've been to a couple playoff games doing it for Westwood One Radio. There's nothing better than a full house.
It's unbelievable.
There's nothing better. You sit there, I just get goosebumps. I'm sitting there going, man, I just want to sit here for the rest of the day and just the atmosphere. And that should be here.
And you played in it. I mean, you know,
it's a big difference.
Were home games here in the playoffs,
it's huge.
I covered them. It's an unbelievable thing. When the team is hot, when you know it's consistent, when it's there every year, when there's excitement and energy. I mean, I guess it's been so long, some people have forgotten that. But it's an incredible thing. I covered a lot of playoff teams in Indianapolis. It is a really cool thing when it gets going.
Let me say it this way. And I said, the fans need to understand, and please forget the money for a second as far as the business model for the Jaguars. That is not the main concern at this point. Think about it from a Sunday game day experience. Standpoint. It is a better experience when it's full. There's no arguing that. As a player, when I go on the road and was a left tackle and could not hear the snap count, it was more difficult to play the game, meaning the fans had an impact on the outcome of the game. And so if you're a fan of the Jaguars and you want us to win, you actually can have an impact in the game if you show up and make it very difficult for the left tackle of the other team to hear the snap count and try to block Jeremy Mincy or whoever the defensive end is. I mean, it matters. I mean, it matters when that place is full. It changes. As a player, when you walk out, the energy and the excitement that you experience because of a full house, your fans, it matters. I remember going to visiting stadiums, you walk out, and it's so loud, you're like, it's going to be a long day. It's going to be tough. Not that you can't win.
And when you walk out, and I assume when you walk out and it's dismal and half full and you know people are yelling at their own guys.
Oh, it's great because you're like, I'm going to hear.
You're laughing.
It's going to be easy. I'll be able to hear on third down. This crowd's not going to be a factor.
You can give the other team grief about it.
Yeah, it's one less thing I have to worry about.
355-NFL-1. Let's grab Dave from St. Augustine, and then we'll take our break for news here at the bottom of the hour. Dave, welcome to the show.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. I agree that putting up a shade machine is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Wear a hat, please. But I wanted to give a big thank you to everybody involved last night. I wasn't able to make it, but between the radio and Twitter, the Oshers of the world, and every Jaguars insider, and it was really good. You could feel the energy through the radio. you know, I felt like I was there, like I said. But they said going forward they're going to have more events like that. I really hope they sprinkle in some weekend dates for that, because myself, you know, I try to attend every Jaguar function that I can, but I work all day basically through the weekend. I've had so many people tell me that they wish they would have had something like this on the weekend, you know, because I mean, it was a great turnout as it was, I know, but if it was a weekend deal, I'm sure there would be so much more. So let's keep it up. Let's keep the fire stoked. Go Jaguars. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dave.
All right, time for news here on News Talk WOKV, and we're back with another half hour of Jaguars This Week here on Jaguars Radio.
690 and more.
Welcome back. Jaguars This Week rolls along here on News Talk WOKV and Jaguars Radio. About to 22 minutes left in our program this evening. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. How about a little football news from last night? Going to spend to the cap.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Shad was asked about, you know, spending in free agency. And, you know, for some reason there was this perception that, you know, Wayne didn't spend money, which I've never really agreed with. I think he spent –
Last year?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Jaguars generally spent. But, you know, that's the perception. And, you know, so the question was –
But how far are we under the cap?
For this year – what?
I think it's like $30 million, aren't we? Or some big number? Yeah, so
– It was a big number this year, but so they spent a lot of cash this year.
I understand that, but you have to understand the fan
– I understand the perception.
Not just the perception. The reality is they read the list of the teams who have the most cap room. And we're one of them, and so their next question is why don't we go use that cap room to bring better players in?
Right.
Now, what they don't realize is you can't just spend money to spend money.
Right.
I mean, last year, like, let's take wide receiver. You could have spent all $35 million on wide receivers and still not gotten anybody because there was no wide receivers to go get that were difference makers.
Right. And especially in what was going on here.
In what
anyway.
Was going on here anyway. So, the I think you're going to see, it sounds like, us spending more up to the cap. But that doesn't mean, fans need to understand, that doesn't mean we're going to start throwing money around just to go get guys and pay them.
Right. The emphasis, you know, and there were some fans who, I think, correctly so, wrote into me today and said, I really don't like hearing that because they remembered the 2008. They remembered some of the bad free agent signings.
That's not going
to happen. But it doesn't have to be a bad thing.
No, it doesn't.
If done wisely, and you know, while you were there last night, the first thing Gene said was, "We will have a target list. We will have target priorities, and once those target priorities are established, we will be aggressive going after it." Which tells me they're going to go get the right guy. They're not going to go out and get, you know, guys who are washed up. It will fit a plan, and you know, I'm optimistic
that's
about
what
free
you
agency,
want.
Right? And there are some teams who like to go out and get
the guy
they read in the newspaper, and even sometimes at the expense of, hey, I'm going to go get a cornerback and get a little better at this position because this guy's a star. Gene believes in, if there's a need, you address it in free agency and you build for the long term.
Well,
during the draft.
Perfect example of that is the Philadelphia Eagles this past year, and Nnamdi Asawa was the prize guy, and they spent a bunch of money, and they spent a bunch of money with Jason Babin, who had a good year.
Right.
And I'm not saying Nnamdi didn't have a good year. I mean, he struggled early. And they spent all this money on defensive guys and playmakers, and they stunk.
Right.
And at one point, they had one of the worst pass defenses in the NFL. Now, you could argue is that scheme, coaching, whatever. The bottom line is, just because you spend money doesn't mean you're going
to
be good.
Right. It has to be done the right way. It has to be done in a prudent way. And it still has to be done with the idea of staying young, staying building, staying pertinent, you know, moving in the right direction. So I don't have any doubt that's what they'll do.
I thought the Giants are a good example of how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they actually do it the exact same way. You look at the guys they've drafted. I mean, Jason Pierre-Paul is a great example. They had Mathias Kiwanuka and Justin Tuck and O.C. Umenyiora, and they still took Jason Pierre-Paul. They have a bunch of corners, and they still take Prince Amukamara. They have a bunch of receivers. They still take Akiem Nicks. They build long-term by taking the best available player no matter what the position, and they have always used free agency wisely.
To fill me, and that's
why they're competitive.
You know, I did get a question today saying, is this a departure in Gene's philosophy? And it's really not at all. He believes you build through the draft, and in reality, they're still 4 years in on that. You know, they're just going to their fourth year on that process. And where there are holes, where there are needs, you fill them in free agency. And all you got to do is look back toward, you know, to last offseason, and that's what they'll do on offense this year. They'll take the same approach, except doing it, you know, they did on defense last offseason. they'll approach it the same way offensively this offseason.
And, of course, we can't even start speculating because we don't know who's going to get there. And one of the things that's going to, you know, be a wrench in free agency this year is teams have more money to spend.
Mm-hmm.
The new CBA has put more money into teams' pockets so they can keep the guys that they really want to keep.
And that, of course, is always the problem in free agency is if there's a guy, you know, if there's a guy out there, why is he out there? And that's the age-old
question.
But
in some cases, it's going to be there's going to be teams that do have cap issues.
Oh, yeah, no, there are.
I mean, like the New Orleans Saints, they're going to have to pay Drew Brees $30 million or whatever. Are they going to pony up 10 for Colston at the same time?
Probably not.
Probably not. Right. So Colston's probably going to be a guy who's out there. Heck, on the defensive side of the ball, there's a lot of talk in Houston, Mario Williams.
Well,
they can't franchise him because it's going to be a $26 million number.
And they've got two guys that played exceptionally well in that 3-4 scheme when he wasn't there.
And so are they going to pay him $25? He'll probably be a free agent. They say they want to bring him back, but are they going to – I mean
– that's one of those things you say now, but I would be surprised if they brought him back. And
so there's going to be good guys out there. You look at Vincent Jackson. They can't franchise him because of the agreement coming out of the lockout and everything in his settlement, whatever that was. They can't franchise him. Vincent Jackson,
or he's
going
to walk.
Is going to be a free agent.
Right.
I mean, there's going to be situations like that where you're going to see guys hit free agency. Now, there's going to be other cases where guys just get signed. Reggie Wayne is probably going to be a free agent.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, with all the change up there now.
I'm not saying he's your number one, but, boy, he'd be a great number two for 3 years, sign a 3-year deal. I mean, this is what Gene will do.
I would be surprised if you don't see him go after a player of Reggie's age and another wide receiver in that 27 to 28-year-old range. Yep. Having that sort of combination makes a lot of sense.
I agree.
Well, you create the expectation for any young players that you bring in versus the draft.
Well, not only that, but then you don't have to draft a receiver at 7 if he's not there.
Right. Which could be a dangerous spot to try to draft one this year.
Exactly right.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Let's take a break, and we'll come back with one final segment, Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, only on Jaguars Radio. There are about 11 minutes left in our program this evening. Jaguars This Week in off-season mode. It's kind of quiet in here this evening. Last couple of weeks we had Shad Khan and then
Mike Mularkey.
Shad and Mike were here last week, and this week we can't even get Loggeman in here.
Loggy, he's in Vegas hanging out at the gun show.
Absolutely.
Shooting stuff.
It's the off-season, baby. You got to take advantage of that.
I'll be off for the next 5 months.
Really?
No, I'll be here.
How will we know?
He doesn't say much, folks, but when he says it,
that hurts.
It is
this horrible. All in jest.
That hurts.
All right. So let's talk about the championship games.
I'll be at the New England Baltimore Raven game.
You couldn't get the warmer game, huh?
Trust me, I'm not. I mean, I'm looking forward to the game.
Your ties to Coughlin, they wouldn't send you out there.
No, I would. I'd love to, but no, I'm doing the AFC.
That's an interesting game, though.
It is
the matchup.
It's funny to me that everyone's just assuming and giving it to the Patriots.
Ravens beat them there 2 years ago.
Patriots have struggled against good defenses this year.
They've struggled against good defenses, against physical defenses. Mm-hmm. You can play man and rush the passer, which they can. And New England's defense is not very good.
No.
And everyone says, well, look what they did to the Broncos.
Broncos offense is not very good.
The Broncos offense is awful. And so I think it's a very close game. I think it's a low-scoring game for a Patriot game. I think, you know, it's 21-17, 21-24.
In recent seasons, this is exactly the kind of team that New England
Patriots
struggled against.
Lose, yep.
In the last 4 or 5 years, this is the kind of game they've struggled against. And everybody always thinks going in it's going to be a blowout, and they're shocked when they lose it. But this is the kind of game they lose.
You know, at the end of the day, I think they end up winning, the Patriots. But I think it's a close game, tough game, decided in the fourth quarter. It's going to be cold. It snows there Saturday, which I fly in Saturday. And right now there's not supposed to be precipitation on Sunday, but a balmy 37, which compared to the 18 degrees with wind chill in the single digits last week.
So wait now, you were just telling people not to complain about the heat, and you're complaining about the cold.
I was there, baby, out there the whole game. I didn't move.
You got a different strategy to be warm this time?
I mean, the only thing that was cold was my face and the wind, and you can't do anything on my lips. I got so chapped that I could taste the blood by the end of the game. It was awful. I need to bring chapstick is what I need to do.
I think everybody expected that. I mean, nobody would have been surprised before the season if you had said Ravens-Patriots.
No.
The other one is shocking and intriguing, and I think it says a lot about where the NFL really is right now. People assumed that the winner of the Super Bowl this year was going to be a pass all over the place, this basketball on grass, as my predecessor liked to call it, people assumed that that was going to be the Super Bowl winner, that that was the way the league is going. And I think last weekend's games really showed that, for Jaguars fans following it, that there's a place for the way that they're going to try to play under Mularkey, that you can win with balanced offense and good defense, and you don't have to be a franchise, elite-level quarterback throwing the ball to big-time wide receivers. That's not the only formula you can win with, and I think the NFC proved that.
Absolutely, and not just the NFC. What about the AFC? The Baltimore Ravens are middle-of-the-pack offense.
Right.
Average to below-average passing game. Great running back, great defense. Mm-hmm. So all we heard was you have to throw it around the field and have great quarterbacks like John just said and big-time receivers and score 100 points and throw for, 400 yards a game. Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers. All we heard all year was that.
And clearly you can still win that
way.
The Packers won it last year doing that.
But
that's viable.
You still win with great defense, a very good physical running game, and a smart passing offense. Look at the Ravens and the 49ers. Two of the four teams in the championship games are middle-of-the-pack offenses with below-average passing games.
But great defense.
Great defense. What do we have here? We have the opportunity for a great defense. Right. We're sixth.
Very close to it, right.
We're not there yet. We need some more pieces, but we're very close. We have a great running game. We need if we get our passing game up to average next year,
mm-hmm.
there is no reason. Here's the other team. You know the best team in the AFC this year before their quarterback got hurt was Houston?
Yeah.
I would argue all day long.
No, you're right. If they Houston ran the ball and they could throw it and they played great.
If
defense.
Houston doesn't, if Matt Schaub doesn't get hurt, they're the best team in the AFC.
And they are fundamentally a running team. They are not a
passing
running
defense.
Team.
I mean, great defense. They run the ball as much or more than anybody, and they play action pass with naked waggles, bootlegs, and some drop back passing in their passing game. That's it. They're not a pass first team, not even close.
Right. If they have an average quarterback in the playoffs this year,
they're
probably still playing.
They're still playing.
And so, I might have home field advantage.
Of the four teams that are left, are the Giants the most complete?
Healthy, yes. Yes, healthy.
And they've got,
They don't run the ball all that well.
They have the last 3 weeks.
No,
they got Ahmad Bradshaw better.
Exactly.
And they've got a quarterback playing at a really high level.
Eli Manning is elite quarterback.
Yeah.
I put him in the same right there. You know, obviously Drew Brees and Rodgers and Brady would be the top three. But Eli Manning's next.
If you put Eli in those offenses, I'm not sure he couldn't do the same thing.
No, Eli's next.
He makes really good decisions, and he makes really good decisions when he's under pressure.
And he makes throws.
Yeah.
Oh.
And he makes some big-time plays when guys at his feet, where he looks off guys and sees things going on that he couldn't do 2 years ago. But somewhere along the line this year, he moved up a level.
He's an elite quarterback.
There. Yeah. It's
his offensive line against the Packers, it gave him time to stand almost flat-footed,
especially on
third down.
Yeah, but and I love giving the O-line credit, but you realize the Packers only had 26 sacks for the year or something like that.
Right.
They were awful rushing the passer all year. This was not the same Packer defense when they had Colin Jenkins, who went to the Jets. That was a big loss for the Packers. Clay Matthews was beat up all year.
Right.
He did not have the same year. And so they had some mitigating circumstances that changed.
Right.
Understood, but that offensive line's gotten a lot of credit. They deserve
they
it.
Sure. No,
they
sure. No,
well.
I'm just saying, but it wasn't – it'll
no,
be
I
a
mean,
much –
They were playing the Ravens.
It'll be a – not or the 49ers. Justin Smith, Alden Smith, those two guys coming off the corner, it's a much tougher task this week.
And we don't have much time left. We'd be remiss if we didn't talk about Tom in this.
No, without a doubt.
Fourth championship game, and again – Pete Prisco, I know, did a story talking to you a little bit this week about Tom. The guy's written off almost every year he's been in New York, and I think once again he's proven that, anything else you say about him, he can really coach.
If he wins the Super Bowl this year, he will go in the Hall of Fame.
He deserves it.
And should.
No, there's not even a question. You could maybe make an argument if he just goes and loses.
Right. When you do it.
If he wins, he's in the –
When you do it twice, which he did it twice. He did it here.
Right.
And I built this into something that, was historic, and to go up to to New York and do it, to win the game that he wanted in 2007, which is one of the most memorable Super Bowls ever.
Right.
He'll have the body of work, and he'll have one of those things where, can you write the history of the game without him? It'd be awfully hard to at this point, because he's done a lot of things that everybody should remember.
He's as consistent as Parcells.
Yeah.
Maybe more in the two places he's been.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
Parcells wasn't a wild winner with the Cowboys.
Well, he was with the Patriots. He went to the Super Bowl.
No, I know.
He won two in New York, went to a third.
I'm saying Coughlin's up hard with that.
You know, well, we've talked about it a lot, but Tony, what is it about him that in times of crisis that
he's
coaches
consistent.
So well?
Tom Coughlin is consistent.
But it's, you always hear players.
I know every day the sun comes up, Tom Coughlin's the same.
But back to when you played for him, we used to talk to you on and off the record about, you know, how miserable it was to play for him. You used to complain about it. Players up there complain about it. And yet when it comes down to it.
Because he's consistent.
Right.
And as a player, even if you complain about it, you still like structure and discipline. Because it allows you to focus on what you need to do. Because all the variables mm-hmm. that go into being an athlete and the surrounding noise, he eliminates as much of that as possible. And so you're focused on what you have to do. And that consistency and knowing what you're supposed to do and knowing the expectations and being prepared,
right.
He prepares his teams as well as anybody for every circumstance.
If he makes it to the Hall of Fame, does he go up on the ring here?
Yes.
Does he go up if he doesn't make the Hall of Fame?
I think so, yes. You can't tell the story of the Jacksonville Jaguars without Tom
right.
Coughlin.
I've made that case, and I've had people tell me he does not go up there.
He has to.
Well, I don't have a vote.
None
but
of us
if
do.
I did, I would put him up there.
Well, he may not go up, but there are people associated with him who think of him as there already. I mean, people associated with the team. I'm sure. Yeah, I mean,
I do.
You have to. I covered him, so I'm a little biased. But as Tony just said, you can't think about this team without thinking about Tom Coughlin still. Yeah, I mean.
I agree.
So
I mean, it wasn't like he was just the coach. We forget that he was the coach, the GM. I mean, nothing happened in this building without his fingerprints on it.
Well, it's funny. When I covered the team, you could not walk around here anywhere, even if he wasn't in the building, without feeling like he was in the building. He was that sort of a presence. I'm sure you felt the same
way. And he was pretty
much
always in the building.
Well, sure. I mean, right.
I don't remember him sleeping much either.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Good for him.
And I'm rooting for him this year. I'm rooting for the Giants.
I think a lot of people in Jacksonville, if they're being completely honest, are cheering wildly for him and the Giants now.
Well, because this is a guy who succeeds because of the conviction of his beliefs. And that, you know.
Which, I got a question today when I spoke saying, how do you compare Mike Mularkey to Tom Coughlin? I said, I haven't spent as much time with Mike, but the one thing I get the sense of, just like Tom Coughlin was a man of conviction and what was right and what was wrong, and he was going to live and coach that way, Mike Mularkey's the same way in that sense. A real strong conviction of how he wants to coach, how he wants to build a team, and how things are supposed to be done. And I think that's something they both have that is similar in both of them.
And we'll end on that. Tony, thanks. John, appreciate it. Joe Fortunato, the entire gang here this evening. Have a great night, everybody.